It's called The Black Man Is God. It's called The Black Man Is God. Next album. This is for the children. You know what I'm saying? I got this idea from myself, of course, but this is for the children. I got.
Make this prediction. This will be the biggest upset in all fighting history. It'll be the easiest fight of my life.
You think your cousin can whoop me? You really do? Anybody on your watch? Anybody in my family?
He's young. He's handsome.
They know it.
He's a poet, a prophet.
Goal ain't have a net. Who would have dreams and karaoke to cassette? I met OB as an OG in the section. Nah, I was legend, rest in peace, Pop's a legend, Mike Corey and Sean Jordan was the essence of the young chorus where we grew from. Seemed like a second, now they less important to the new sun. I guess today weighs more than yesterday. It's morbid to suggest that they will come for them too. When it's a brother younger than you, who humble and who? Used to coach him, now he coached him, blew up, who knew? He caught you on a rough night, you were stumbling through. Now he telling you to get yours, get yours.
All of you reporters made it hard on them.
So I'm gonna tell y'all a quick story right quick. So my son was born in 2015. Right at the end of the year. And 6 months after that, the Cleveland Cavaliers won the NBA championship. Now, mind you, I have never witnessed a Cleveland sports team win a championship. And this is me being growing up in Cleveland, being a Cleveland sports fan and all that. Never seen it. No team had ever won before. And then I get a son. Boom. 6 months later, title. You know what I mean? That's exactly what happened. So then I started realizing that I have another baby due any day now. And the Browns were on this horrific losing streak. And it dawned on me that the Browns aren't going to win until this kid is born. Now, mind you, my child has not entered the world just yet. We're like seriously on like the last days, but it hasn't happened yet. But the Browns did win on Thursday night, y'all. That happened. And this is kind of what I've concluded, is that as long as this kid is born inside the week 3 window of the NFL season, I'm crediting my child with that one as well. It's the preseason podcast of the year, y'all. Jay Hicks is back on Saturday, September 22nd. It is a Saturday, but we're going to be talking about some NFL football today. Got a great guest, always a great guest with us here in the makeshift studios here with the Hip Hop Sports Report. Actually calling in on the Your Ad Here hotline is cousin Vince Hicks. How you doing, Vince?
I'm doing good, man. Probably the best I felt in about 600 or so days.
That's a good way to put it, man. Because
exactly. You got to get it while you can.
Right.
So I'm doing well. Good on this Saturday afternoon. It's dreary, but we're making it.
Yeah. The Browns won a game, man. I'll be doggone.
Browns won a football game.
It's something that you do not see very often.
No, you don't. It feels like it's a professional football town again.
You know what's funny about that, man, is that I'm in my early 30s and I barely remember when the Browns were good. Like in the early to mid 90s, they were pretty good. They weren't great, but they were pretty good and they were competitive and they were a professional organization. When they were going to AFC championship games and stuff like that, I'm too young to even remember that.
See, that was around my wheelhouse days. I mean, I was from late adolescence to early teens when they were making those runs. So, I mean, I remember them vividly. I was a big Browns fan then. As we all know, they went away in 95 and came back in 99. And, you know, out of this last 19, 18 years, I have season tickets for like 14 of those 18 years. And we put a pretty bad product out on the football field. But I'm a diehard Browns fan and I go back to those throwback years. And that's what keeps me going. So yesterday, Thursday was a good night.
There's definitely a lot to say about Thursday night on now we're here Saturday afternoon on September 22nd. So as you all know, this is the preseason podcast of the year. We talk sports, we talk hip-hop, even the Cleveland rappers are making the news these days, but we're not gonna talk about that right now. We want to get into some football talk because we didn't really get to come at y'all with an NFL preview this year. And that's just due to life getting in the way, as it is wont to do from time to time. But I wanted to make sure that Vince and I had the opportunity to rap about the NFL season. It's not really a preview because the season already started, but we can still share our thoughts as far as what direction we think that this NFL season is going to take us. And I wanted to talk a lot about the Cleveland Browns because they are the hottest topic in sports right now, believe it or not. City of Cleveland's been on quite the run in sports in terms of just interest and popularity. And, you know, we had LeBron and the Cavs is in the finals four straight years. The Indians making the World Series, making another pennant run this year and last year. They had that historic winning streak last year. Then you got the Browns going winless, back-to-back number one overall picks. Baker Mayfield, Thursday Night Football, winning their first game. You know, free beer for everybody. Cleveland radio hosts is eating horse manure on the air. It's crazy. It's nuts, man. So ain't nobody out there that's gonna give y'all Cleveland sports better than us. I know that's for damn sure.
Oh, definitely.
And so that's why we want to
the core, and we give it raw. We're gonna give it to you straightforward, good and bad on both ends. We real Cleveland fans.
Right.
So we cut no corners.
Right. Right.
And no sugarcoating here.
Nah, not at all. And make sure y'all check out the website, hiphopsportsupport.com. Of course, Twitter page, twitter.com/HHSreport. Same for Facebook, facebook.com/HHSreport. We're on iTunes. We're on SoundCloud. We're on everywhere, man. We're just anywhere that you can listen to a podcast. We there. We should be there. But make sure you hit us up on the site. Let us know what you think. Leave comments on iTunes. Let us know what you think of the podcast. We got an article out right now that I wrote about Mitch Trubisky. We might talk a little bit about the Chicago Bears a little bit later on. Got some stuff about Eminem and MGK, as I referenced earlier, that's out there on the site. So y'all go ahead and check that out. Now, I think we're done with the preamble, I think. I think we can get into the Cleveland Browns, man. They won a football game. Baker Mayfield came in and saved the day. It was weird, though, how the whole thing went down. And weird, you know, mostly good, because obviously the Browns won. It was great for the city. But there were some things about what happened that night and the aftermath therein that don't quite sit right with me. And I think you share some of those same opinions, Vince. Is that right?
That is correct. 100%.
Yeah. So let me just start by saying my piece about Baker Mayfield. So if you go back and listen to the Mark Draft podcast from April, where your brother, my cousin, Mark Hicks, broke down Baker Mayfield. I went back and listened to it today. Fantastic description of Baker's game from Mark Hicks. If you go back and listen to it, he was excellent, and he hit Baker on the head, or so it would appear, through four preseason games and three regular season games. It seems like Mark's scouting report was dead on Baker. My general belief on Baker was that there were too many red flags for me to want to waste that high of a pick on him. And I shouldn't say waste, because he's not a terrible player. I never thought that. And some people call me on it this week trying to say that, well, you were never a Baker guy, whatever, whatever. And no, I'm not really a Baker guy. I would not say that. But I would say where I kind of fell on Baker Mayfield, this is kind of my position on him going into the year, was that eventually the job will be his. Obviously, we knew that. And I believe that he would be better than the majority of the quarterbacks we've seen in Cleveland in recent years, because we've seen so many of them. Baker, when he starts next week, even though Hugh Jackson hasn't made it official, he'll be the 30th quarterback since 99. Baker will be better than most of them, but that doesn't mean Baker will be good enough to get the Browns to the promised land, which is a Super Bowl. And that's the goal, right? The goal is
that's
to find
definitely the goal.
Yeah, you want a franchise quarterback that's dependable, that can be there every week, that can stay healthy, stay on the field, stay out of trouble, and can make your football team competitive every year. That's what a franchise quarterback is. I don't know if Baker is that guy that is going to get the Browns to the point where they're going to be competing for Super Bowls on a regular basis. And that's where I kind of fell on him. Not that he's not good, not that he can't win a game or two, none of that, but just that I don't see him being the long-term answer. You know, he might turn the Browns into a team that's competitive for a playoff spot, but I don't see him making the Browns competitive to the point that they're competing for Super Bowls. So let's set that as the baseline for this discussion right now with Baker Mayfield. So and I want to talk a little bit about what I liked that I saw from him on Thursday, but I'm gonna give you the floor, Vince. What did you like from Baker that you saw on Thursday?
Well, like I said, I would definitely agree with you with your ceiling with Baker Mayfield, and I'm not a Baker guy, as you would say, anyway. But I'm a Browns guy, so once they made the pick, I became a Baker guy, because if he's not successful, that sets our franchise back 5 to 7 years again, and we don't want to go through that anymore. But on from there, Thursday night, he showed me what he showed me pretty much all preseason. My pluses for Baker was he could get the ball out quickly. He never seemed skittish or nervous in the pocket, controlled over the pocket. And he did that. As far as his accuracy goes, he was great in college being accurate. In the pros, that's going to be a little more difficult because of the windows become tighter, the players are better, the schemes are different. But we'll see as his career goes on how his accuracy continues and if it stays at that high pace that it's been in college. But those are the things I saw. Pretty accurate passing, confident in the pocket, standing, being able to stand in the face of the pocket when the pocket is breaking down and make it throw. And, you know, just his leadership qualities, you know what I'm saying? He looked pretty good. Like, it looked like everybody rallied around him when he came in the game. So, as a rookie quarterback, you don't get that with a lot of rookies because veterans are usually skeptical about a rookie quarterback. So, those are the things I liked about Thursday, about Baker Mayfield.
I would agree 1,000% with everything you just said. Most notably, the energy in that building shifted when he came on the field. And that's a good thing and a bad thing, actually. And we'll talk a little bit about that. But yeah, it was definitely good for the Browns' prospects for winning that football game because they were dead in the water in the first half. The offense with Tyrod was not going anywhere. And the entire crowd seemed to have showed up that day with the intention of seeing Baker Mayfield perform. And so that ultimately was what people paid money to see. They wanted to see Baker versus Darnold, and Baker did not disappoint. So just given the fact that he's dealing with the expectations of being the number one overall pick, coming into a situation where he did not have reps with the ones, right, at all, at any point, and he just walked in, and no situation ever looks too big for him.
For
example, if you take his playoff game last year in college football, dynamic in the first half, subpar in the second half, and Oklahoma ended up losing to Georgia in a close game, but he never seemed rattled at any point. He never seemed rattled in front of the media. He's never seemed rattled. You know, he goes on Colin Cowherd's show and the Herd is trying to bait him into talking about the arrest situation, and he handled that well. The word that keeps coming up with Baker is unflappable, and I can't disagree with that at all. He seems like he's ready for everything that comes with being the number one pick and trying to turn around a losing franchise. And maybe that's why John Dorsey picked him, because even though I felt Josh Rosen was the correct pick from a talent perspective, that leadership and that other stuff that we're talking about, that Baker can handle himself in any circumstance, that's the kind of stuff that you really can't get a feel for until you get in a room with somebody. And so he's was phenomenal as far as that's concerned. So the energy was real. The fans felt it. I've talked to people who were at the game. They told me that it was real and it felt real. That counts for a lot. The arm strength, there was some snap on his passes that, you know, when they came out, they came out firing, you know what I mean? And I was somewhat critical of his arm strength on the podcast back in April. I just thought it was maybe not as strong as it appears to be, but he does have a strong arm, and I was wrong about that. It looks like his arm is strong. He's accurate, which we knew. My skepticism was around the fact that he was throwing to guys that were wide open in college, and I was unsure if he would be able to throw it and fit it into those tight windows. I don't know that he'll do it for every game, but he did it on Thursday night. He was fitting it into some tight spots. And so the accuracy was there. And I think, what did he finish? Like 20 of 17 to 23, 201 yards, no touchdowns, no picks, passer rating of 100.1, caught the 2-point conversion, and he turned the whole game around. And so, like, there's a lot to be excited about if you're a Browns fan, right? But here's the thing, though, and we were afraid of this. We, as in you and I, and you know, some of our other, you know, family members, people in our circle, we were afraid that the Baker hype train was going to get a little carried away. As great as he was in all those areas that I just explained, things seem to be, you know, as decisive with his decisions as he was, which we didn't see from Tyrod, seemed skittish in the pocket. And Baker wasn't that. Baker seemed confident in everything that he was doing. And as great as that is, it certainly seemed like the team and or the coaching staff for the Browns had it out for Tyrod Taylor. Do you agree with that?
100%.
So take me through 100%. So take me through what you think about that. What makes you feel that way? Because I have some stuff. I got a lot of data that I'm going to get to momentarily, but I want to hear it from your mouth first, Vince.
Okay. Yeah, I was watching the game, let's put it this way. I'm not the Baker guy, but I've never been a Tyrod Taylor guy either. I mean, from what I know about the kid, is his players, teammates like him. He doesn't turn the ball over a lot. He's not going to get you those Aaron Rodgers beautiful throws. He's not that kind of guy. He throws a nice deep ball. I mean, as far as fitting in windows or anything, I don't know, because to me, the first three games of the season with Tyrod Taylor at the starting quarterback from Cleveland Browns, the play calling was horrific. And not only horrific, it didn't play off his strengths. And to me, it seemed like it was set up for him to fail. The play calling was purposely put that way because somebody, I got to say Todd Haley, being the offensive coordinator, wanted Baker Mayfield to start as the starting quarterback. So you put Tyrod in bad situations so Baker can play if you can't go to Hugh or Dorsey in management and say, hey, this guy should be the starting quarterback. We're going to find ways to make the starting quarterback look bad so they'll have to play him. Because when you 1-31 or whatever the Browns were coming into the season with Hugh at head coach, once you start going downhill and the team starts losing, they either cut you or you make a breakneck decision to save your job. And I think that, in my opinion, Haley was putting him in a position by calling horrible plays and play calling for Tyrod to make the change to Baker, because that's what he wanted and maybe Hugh didn't want it. So that was the way to do it, at Tyrod's expense, because the first quarter of the game, I don't know how many free blitzers came. I've never seen that many free blitzers come on a quarterback in an NFL game, a whole game, not just in the first quarter. Like, he was getting guys running free off the edge 4, 5, 6 times straight. You know what I'm saying? Like, it looked bad to me. The optics were bad.
If you Very.
Watched the game, the optics were bad, and it was like they were trying to get Tyrod out the game, even if it meant him getting hurt, and that's what got me pissed off.
And I agree with all of that. I mean, and people on social media, as I followed on Twitter throughout the game, were very comfortable saying that they felt that Tyrod just stunk. Oh, Tyrod stinks and he's no good and this offense is terrible with this guy. And I'm like, what game are y'all watching? Because I'm watching a game where they're not blocking for him at all and the play calling is suspect to say the least. And so what I did, Vince, is I went back and I rewatched every drive that Tyrod, I'm going to mess that up the whole show now. Every drive that Tyrod was under center, I went back and watched it, and I documented every play. And guess what? You're probably thinking to yourselves, if you're listening, he ain't going to go through every play. Yes, the hell I am going to go through every play. Because it looked like sabotage. Just like you said, Vince, it looked like sabotage. I've been hard on Todd Haley for years. I've been extremely hard on him on Twitter, and you guys can check the tweets. I got the receipts. The tweet receipts are there. I've been very hard on Todd Haley going back to his days in Kansas City, not even in Pittsburgh, going back to Kansas City when he was a head coach. He was doing stuff that I questioned at that time. And then he was getting credit in Pittsburgh for being some kind of offensive savant, in spite of the fact that he's got this Hall of Fame talent all over the place. So, like, anybody could step into that role with guys that talented and have positive results and see a positive impact. So I wasn't really buying into the Todd Haley hype to begin with. Plus, he's got an ego and all that. And so I wasn't too thrilled for the Browns' sake when he came over anyways. And wasn't there a story from the preseason, Vince, about how Todd Haley wanted Baker to start and that Hugh didn't? Hugh Jackson wasn't? Did I remember that correctly?
And I think you may be right. And
I got to go back and look.
The thing I want to say before you go is, like, everybody in our circle was pretty much down on Todd Haley. I wasn't a great Todd Haley fan, but I was looking forward to him as nothing to do with me disliking Todd Haley, because you know that's what you'll hear. Oh, these guys didn't like Todd Haley in the first place. No, I gave Todd Haley a fair shot, and from what I saw Thursday, he was willing to get Tyrod Taylor killed to get Baker Mayfield in as quarterback. And that's it was totally unprofessional, and it totally took me back. Like, before I make this assumption, I watched it a couple of times, and I'm like, I don't want to put this out here in the universe saying that this guy purposely was trying to get Tyrod hurt. But in my opinion, and I've talked to several guys that were at the game, in their opinion, it looked that way. Because we haven't really talked about that part of the scenario, the sabotage scenario. We talked about the bad play calling, but you and myself have never talked about that in the last couple of days. And for you to say the same thing that I said and a couple other guys have said, I mean, I think the proof is in the pudding, actually.
Yeah. I mean, it didn't look good at all. And like, once you break down the plays, it makes you wonder, like, how was Tyrod supposed to succeed, to your earlier point? And again, the play calling was suspect in the first two games, okay? So, like, let's get that out the way. Like, let's remember that this is the same Todd Haley who asked Tyrod Taylor to drop back and pass 40 times in a monsoon the first week of the season, okay? Does that make a ton of sense?
None at all.
I mean, when you got a rookie running back and another free agent running back that you went out and spent money on, and it's coming down like buckets in Cleveland Browns Stadium, and it's fog and everything else, and it's windy, and the kickers can't kick on either side, and you're going to have your quarterback drop back 40 times?
Yeah.
With Josh Gordon barely even knowing the playbook, and he's out there running, you know, one route.
Running around, running wrong routes.
Yeah, like that didn't make any sense anyway.
Let's even go to the other extent. Your former team on the other side with a guy that's going to be in the Hall of Fame, and no Le'Veon Bell, still didn't throw the ball 40 times.
Nah, they had to back up James Conner killing the fantasy football game.
Exactly.
And I know, because I was on the business end of it.
So you coming from an organization who everybody knows Big Ben likes to throw the ball and likes to pass, since he got the wins and the Super Bowls to back in 90s, these 4,500-yard seasons, he feels that that's going to legitimize him, you know what I'm saying, as a QB, as a great QB. Tyrod Taylor is not Ben Roethlisberger.
Right.
So if Ben Roethlisberger threw the ball 40 or 50 times, and then you say, oh, whatever, just trying to keep up with the pace, that's something different.
Yeah, exactly. And would you even have Baker Mayfield throw the ball 40 times? That would be the wrong strategy for him if Baker was in there.
Horribly wrong strategy.
Yeah, you wouldn't have your rookie quarterback in his first ever game throw the ball 40 times either. That would be foolish. That's what they did with Kaiser last year. That didn't work. So, exactly. Okay. But so let's get into this right quick, y'all. I have the notes. I have the data. Settle in. This is going to take about maybe, hopefully not, just a couple minutes for me to blow through these plays, man. But you guys are going to notice a pattern here, okay? First drive of the game. And now, mind you, again, the backdrop here is that the Browns are 0-2. Everybody said that the Browns should be 2-0. Right? Everybody said that. Everybody said that they should have beat the Steelers, which they should have. Everybody said that they should have beat the Saints, which they should have. But then those same people are turning around and saying they'd be 3-0 if Baker Mayfield had started all three games. You can't have it both ways, fellas. It doesn't work like that. Okay? That doesn't make sense. That's not fair. If you're going to say that Baker would be 3-0, then you can't sit here and come down on Tyrod when you know, he should have been 2-0 also. Like, if we should have been 2-0, then that means we should have been 2-0 with Tyrod starting at quarterback, in which case, if he has two wins coming into this game, then you don't hear the fans clamoring for Baker Mayfield at every mistake that Tyrod makes, okay?
Yeah.
So that's the backdrop, first of all. But let me get into this, y'all. First drive of the game, first play. It's a play fake to a wide receiver screen that was incomplete. There was heavy pressure on that play. Heavy pressure is a word that you're going to hear a lot. Second play was a quarterback keeper for some reason on 2nd and 10, a design run. Tyrod got 2 yards. Third play, 3rd and 8, a bad pass by Taylor. He threw it up the sideline out of bounds. I think he was going for Callaway. Second drive, 4 receiver set. First play, batted pass, incomplete. Second play, safety blitz off the edge. Tyrod was heavily pressured by 2 jets and was knocked down on that play, incomplete. 3rd and 10, heavy pressure again on a drop back. Tyrod scrambles for 22 yards. 4th play, flea flicker. Now, pause right there. On the flea flicker, the safety blitzes. It was Adams, the kid from LSU. He blitzes unblocked, mind you, and he knocks down Tyrod Taylor. How do you, Vince, run a flea flicker if you haven't established the run?
You don't.
How do you do that?
Like, as no matter what you think of Ty Haley, he knows better.
Yeah, like they didn't even, like, forget establish the run. They had not handed it to the running back yet.
Not yet.
And they're running a flea flicker. So that's a dumb play. And the safety was unaccounted for. He came in, pressured Tyrod, knocked him down. Next play was the fifth play of the drive. Carlos Hyde runs for 4 yards. Sixth play, heavy pressure again. Pass to the end zone to Callaway, Antonio Callaway. He was clearly interfered with, but somehow they got away with it and they didn't call it. Now, the reason why that's relevant is because if they throw the flag, the Browns have the ball on the 1 yard line, they probably score. So now Tyrod Taylor's overall performance doesn't look quite as bad because the Browns are operating with a 7-0 lead. That gives him confidence. That gives the team confidence. It lets the fans settle down a little bit. It's a different ball game, I think, if the Browns get those 7 points, which they probably should have gotten. Third drive, they had great field position inside the Jets' 40-yard line on this drive to start. Play one, a blown blitz assignment. Tyrod Taylor sacked for a 7-yard loss. Two Jets were near him on the play. Second play, quarterback keeper again for a gain of 3 yards. Fans already start booing at this point. Third play of the drive, third and 14. They went a wide receiver screen on third and 14 with one blocker. There was only one blocker to set up the screen pass. I kid you not. Go back and look at the tape, y'all.
Oh, I remember it 100% completely.
The right tackle goes out to set the screen or to set up the block for the receiver on that screen pass. I've never seen a successful screen pass work when there was only one blocker. But and hence, this was not successful either. It was a 2-yard gain. Fans already pissed off, and the Browns punt. Fourth drive. This is where they had some success. They were pinned deep, but Carlos Hyde ripped off a 21-yard run. They go no huddle for the only time with Tyrod. Carlos Hyde picks up 5 yards. Next play, Carlos Hyde picks up 3 yards. Fourth play, third and two, a quarterback draw for some reason on third and two.
Yeah.
I don't know why they called that. That was a loss of 6 yards. There was a linebacker in that was unblocked. On the fifth play of the drive, the Browns got the punt blocked. Now, if you remember last week in New Orleans, or excuse me, 2 weeks ago against the Steelers, the Browns had a punt blocked that could have potentially helped them win that game if that punt is not blocked, but that came back to bite them. You know what I mean? It's like, these are the kinds of things that are happening when Tyrod is out there. You have missed blitz assignments. You have guys running it unblocked. You have punts that are getting blocked. Okay? Keep that under your hat, y'all. Remember that. Fifth drive. Now the Browns are down 7-0. First play. Play fake. It's a bad pass by Tyrod. Underthrown. That was the bomb to Callaway up the middle. Callaway should have scored. Could have came back on the ball and made a play on it. That was a bad pass by Tyrod because he underthrew Callaway by about 3 to 5 yards. Second play, Carlos Hyde up the middle 4 yards. Third play, third and six, pressure off the corner, unblocked again. I think it was Buster Screen that time. Tyrod Taylor was sacked. Three Jets were in on that play. Next drive, this is Tyrod's last drive, the sixth drive of the game. We're down 14-0, the Browns are at this point. And the previous drive where the Jets had the ball, Joe Schobert had dropped the pick, okay?
Yeah.
So remember that. Now, Joe Schobert drops an interception. At this point, I feel like Tyrod Taylor's already down on himself. The fans, you could feel it in the arena, in the stadium. It was palpable, right? Like, everybody was clamoring for Baker. Joe Buck and Troy Aikman are questioning whether or not Tyrod is going to make it through the game, right? Yeah. Right? I mean, so, like, we heard that on the telecast. First play, heavy pressure up the middle. The pass was complete for no gain. Tyrod was knocked down. He gets up grabbing his back. Second play, bad pass by Tyrod Taylor. He missed a 10-yard route to out route to Callaway. Now the fans are booing loudly. Third play, third and 10. Another bad pass by Tyrod Taylor. He missed a 15-yard out to Landry, but there was a penalty that wiped it out. So fresh set of downs. Nick Chubb runs for no gain. Fifth play, Tyrod Taylor scrambles for 10 yards, and then he's hitting the head, right? There were offsetting penalties on that play. So next play, Carlos Hyde runs for 2-yard loss. The seventh play, third and 12, Tyrod passes to Jarvis Landry on an out route. Great catch and effort by Landry. That was the only play that a receiver or a back made for Tyrod Taylor in this game, was this third and 12 by Landry. He went to the sideline, made it almost like a diving. Like, he was outstretched with two hands, made the catch, then dove to the sideline, stretched the ball out over for the first down. Next play. Play fake. There was light pressure on this play. Taylor dumps it off to Hyde for 5 yards. The ninth play is an 11-yard run by Carlos Hyde. Next play was an 8-yard run by Duke Johnson. The next play, this was coming out of a timeout. Tyrod throws an incomplete pass for Jarvis Landry in the corner of the end zone, where it appeared as though Landry ran the wrong route. And the Browns ended up getting flagged for intentional grounding on that play. So then we're at 3rd and 12. And on that play, Terod holds on to the ball for what looks like a little too long. He not an insane amount of time, but he held it a little long. He may have had a man over the middle of the field that was open, but we couldn't tell because they didn't show it on the telecast, but Aikman alluded to it. He ends up getting sacked again and by a player that was unblocked. And then there's the We Want Baker chance. And that was it.
That was it.
Tyrod was out of the game after that point due to injury. And we didn't see him again. And then Baker Mayfield strolls onto the field. And when Baker Mayfield comes in, everybody's energy picks up. All of a sudden, the playbook opens up, Vince, right? Todd Haley's playbook opens up. We see guys blocking. Baker Mayfield is not, he handled the blitz better. I'll give him that. But he's also not running for his life like Terod was. We see Joe Schobert at the end of the game catch an interception, whereas he dropped the interception. He dropped the interception when Terod was in the game. When Baker's in the game, he catches the interception. And I'm not saying that Joe Schobert did that intentionally, but what I'm saying is that Baker was catching breaks on Thursday that Terod didn't catch for 2.5 games.
Very true.
And that's just 100%. And that's just the truth. Like, Terod was not getting the breaks that Baker got in that game to help that game come back, or to help the Browns come back. And for all the positive things that we said about Baker Mayfield, the kicker was actually making kicks.
Making kicks.
You know what I mean? Wow. Because again, what a novel concept. But I just had to get this out there, y'all. Like,
oh no, I wanted to hear it. Yeah, I saw it. You know what I'm saying? And I'm trying to explain to people without going play by play. But you know, I really wanted to hear it because I've had a few discussions. I won't say arguments. I've had a few discussions with people who just are drinking the Mayfield Kool-Aid and talk to Rod never had a chance or whatever, and they don't seem to see the realistic stuff that went on Thursday. That went on the first 2.5 games,
right,
for Tyrod not to be successful as the Browns quarterback.
Exactly right. And so here you are, you have Tyrod, ultimately there was 14 run plays called, two of them were scrambles actually. So there was 19 pass plays called. Now, not all those passes counted because there were penalties and things like that. But of those 19 passes, two pass plays that were called, two were scrambles, which he only scrambled because he was getting pressured. There was either heavy pressure or a sack on 8 of those 19 plays, Vince.
Exactly.
8 of those 19 plays, pass plays, there was either pressure or a sack. Now, what I found is that men came in unblocked on 4 of those plays. I think that maybe one of them was a run play where there was a guy unblocked and he got a stop for no gain. But 4 times the guys came in unblocked. And also of those 19 plays, there were a couple of screen passes mixed in as well. So, you know, even though there was pressure on some of those screen passes, overall, almost half of the passes that were thrown or attempted to be thrown, Tyrod was either pressured heavily or sacked. Baker didn't have to deal with that.
No, he didn't.
And so when I added it all up, here's what I came up with. I came up with 4 passes that were bad passes on Tyrod's part. The third play that he took, that he threw up the sideline, he threw that one out of bounds. There was the bomb to Callaway that he underthrew. And then there was
the 2-on-1 drive.
And the 2-on-1 drive, there were 2 out routes to Callaway and Landry. One of those didn't even count because of penalty. So it was really 3 passes that were bad passes by Tyrod Taylor. And everybody's talking about how terrible Tyrod was. He threw 3 bad passes and he had nobody to block for him. And his play calling was terrible. And he wasn't getting help from the officials because his guys were getting interfered with and they weren't calling for it. And he got hit in the head. And the run game was inconsistent. And he wasn't getting any help from his defense or special teams. So where does that leave us? That leaves us with Baker. That leaves us with Baker Mayfield getting the sign where LeBron used to be on the side of the building, the Sherwin Williams building. It gets Baker Mayfield now gets to own that because none of this other. You know what I'm saying? Like it was crazy to me. Like again, Baker was great. I'm not saying that Baker was not good, but he wasn't flawless. You know what I'm saying?
Oh, definitely wasn't flawless.
Because I took notes on that too, Vince.
Oh, I got them. They're in my head too. Without even taking notes, you know what I'm saying? Like, I was telling guys, like, we've been talking about Njoku all year.
Mm-hmm.
He hasn't caught a ball down there all year.
Mm-hmm.
Baker comes in, the spark comes, he catches a sliding ball behind him. Like, he hasn't caught ball straight to his hands all year.
Right.
He catches a sliding ball behind him.
Right. That was like his second completion.
The Jarvis Landry passed down the seam. If the quarterback turns around, it's an interception because Jarvis reached over his back to get the football.
Right.
Troy Aikman and them was loving that pass until they resaw it again, and Aikman was like, oh, Baker probably got that a little more inside than he wanted to. Yeah, because if dude would have turned around, he had a pick. When Denzel Ward got the strip and we down on first and goal at like the 12-yard line and we went three and out and punted, and Baker almost threw a pick in the end zone where he didn't see the guy sitting right up under him. If dude wouldn't have dropped that, we wouldn't have had any points after getting a turnover inside the 20. If that was Terod, they would have booed him off the stadium. But it's Baker, so nobody said anything about it.
Exactly. Exactly.
Same
right.
Same thing when you're talking about breaks. When Baker got hit on the strip sack, the ball just bounced back to the Brown stomach. You know what I'm saying? If he fumbles that, now he has a pick and a fumble to start out his first couple drives as the Browns quarterback.
Exactly.
Things changed then.
Exactly.
Like you said, everything worked out right for Baker, never worked out right for Terod, and everybody seems to ignore the fact of the horrible things that Baker did in that game. He did some great things. Like, his best pass to me was the pass that Callaway dropped.
Yeah.
It was beautiful. Down the sideline, on the left side where the defender couldn't get to, a perfect pass. That's Baker's perfect pass I've seen Baker probably throw, even in college. It was a beautiful pass. Callaway dropped it, so it didn't count. But a lot of stuff that they're giving the kid credit for is because they wanted him in there. You know what I'm saying? He played a very good game, not coming in, not playing with the first string guys and all of that. But he wasn't. They want to make him into Joe Montana after a half, and I'm not ready to go with that.
I'm not ready to go with that either.
Got him the starting job, and to me, it was. They kind of, you know what I'm saying? Like I said, we talked about how they did Terod. You know what I'm saying? Like, my thing with the whole Baker situation is I've never been a proponent of drafting somebody that high and making them sit. This sitting quarterbacks until they learn is idiotic. It's never been. I've been watching football for 40 years. You know what I'm saying? Pretty much.
Right.
I've never seen that. You second round guys, third round guys like that, yeah, you sit to draft them. Or if you got Brett Favre as your quarterback, who's a Hall of Famer, or Montana is a Hall of Famer when you got Steve Young. Yeah, they sit behind Hall of Famers, but everybody knows Terod Taylor is not a Hall of Famer. He's a consummate professional that's a good backup, or he could be a good starter on a team that has other weapons and can do other things, but you don't sit the number one quarterback. What is he learning? Sitting on the bench calling the clipboard. So if you wanted the number one pick to play, you don't have to justify the number one pick playing. You just put him on the field.
Yeah, you don't have to go through the work of sabotaging him.
Kaiser being the second round pick or the late round pick, you might have to justify those guys. But the number one overall guy that gets picked in the draft should be one of the top five players in the NFL. They shouldn't have to sit down. No position.
Right.
Quarterback, running back, anything. They should not have to sit. And if you do have to sit a quarterback that's drafted that high, you made the wrong pick.
Yeah.
Because a number one overall pick should be NFL ready. That's why you pick them.
Yeah.
If he's not NFL ready, then you shouldn't pick them.
Everything you're saying makes sense, too.
You don't have to justify by throwing the veteran guy in there, and then when you don't want him in there, trying to get him hurt and killed so you can put this kid in. Just put the kid in.
What's funny is that you mentioned the throw to Callaway was his best throw. While we're on the subject of throws to Callaway, Terod Taylor's throw to Callaway at the end of the Saints game last week, far and away better than anything Baker Mayfield did on Thursday night.
Very true.
I mean, like, that was fourth down. The game was on the line. They were at midfield, and he dropped a dime in the end zone to Callaway. A dime.
63 yards.
And it traveled 62 yards in the air when everybody's talking about he has a noodle arm. And he dropped it in 62 yards, a perfect spiral, fell out of heaven, as Scott Van Pelt, I think, said. Like, that was way more impressive of a single throw than anything Baker did. Baker had, you mentioned the throw to Landry up the seam. That was a great throw by Baker. It turned out to be a great throw. And like you said, the DB didn't turn around. But it was a better catch by Landry. And even though Baker had a couple of drops, he also had a couple of great catches. Rashard Higgins made a great catch on an out route from Baker Mayfield. And these are plays that they weren't making for Terod Taylor. And so, you know, and you mentioned again, he got sacked and fumbled on his third snap of the game. That could have been a turnover. He threw what should have been an interception in the red zone that was dropped. Like, these are things that dramatically change the scope of the game and the scope of what Baker Mayfield, what his evening looked like at the end of the day. He also fumbled on a two-point conversion when he got sacked, but that got wiped out because of a penalty. You know what I mean? So, but
exactly. And like I said, it was all excuses. Tragman, ball safety. He'll learn that as he becomes a person. You should learn ball safety before you get to the NFL.
Right. Ball security is always important.
When the pocket is about to collapse, you should hold on to the football. I know that, and I ain't played since high school. You know what I'm saying? Like,
right.
Quit making excuses for him. When he does something bad, it's cool, because that's the only way you'll learn. If y'all keep making excuses for the kid every time he does something he shouldn't do and say, oh, it's a rookie mistake. No, rookies should be able to read the safety sitting in front of the receiver in the end zone, especially when you're in the red zone, because that's what they tore into Kizer about all year last year.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And Kizer wasn't the number one overall pick.
No, he was not.
So stop making excuses for a guy that should be NFL ready more than anybody in the league because he went number one overall.
Right, right. So, you know, I mean, that's kind of the Baker thing. I mean, like, it seems like you and I are in lockstep on it, man. Like, but it does lead me to a couple of questions, though. Number one, even though you and I are in agreement that either the team sabotage because they weren't blocking for Tyrod, but they blocked for Baker. They weren't making great plays for Tyrod, but they're making great plays for Baker. Either that was the case or the coaching staff sabotaged him with the play calling. But whatever the case may be, Vince, was it for the greater good? Because we can still argue, even with all that being said, we can still argue that Baker's better than Tyrod, right?
Baker's supposed to be better than Tyrod, though. I've never thought that. If anybody thought Tyrod Taylor was better than Baker Mayfield, they don't know football. Tyrod Taylor, I watched Tyrod Taylor at Virginia Tech. Tyrod Taylor's not the number one overall pick. They picked Baker Mayfield because Baker Mayfield is better than any quarterback the Brown had.
Yeah.
He's better.
Yeah.
He's supposed to be better. But my thing is, you don't – to me, it looked like they risked Tyrod having injury to get Baker to play. And like I said in the beginning, you didn't have to do that because you don't have to justify starting the number one pick. And no, it's not for the greater good if an athlete gets hurt because of what you're trying to do. You know what I'm saying? Like, that's the thing. That's the problem I have. And it's really unprofessional on a team that I love. Like I said, I don't know how far it went. I don't know if it went to the players. I don't know if it went upstairs. But somebody had it in for dude, and they was going to get him hurt to prove a point or get another guy in. And that's totally unprofessional, and I don't like the way it's done. Like I said, you could have put Baker in no matter what you wanted to do. And nobody can get mad at you because you drafted the dude number one overall. So, no, it's not for the greater good. Baker was going to end up starting anyway. If you wanted him to start game one, you should have started him game one. But trying to get a guy hurt or, you know what I'm saying, make a guy look bad, which could eventually get him hurt by getting unblocked guys coming in to hit him and taking free shots and stuff like that, it's unprofessional. It's unsportsmanlike. I don't like the character of that on my football team, and I'm pissed off about it.
Yeah, and I think you could make the case that, well, Tyrod could have changed. He could have audibled. He could have seen something in the defense. He could have slid protection this way or that way. But when it happens 4, 5, 6, 7 times, you know, he's either getting killed, running for his life, guys are coming in unblocked. That's a problem. I think it also is a problem that this is a guy that we're talking about with Tyrod Taylor. First of all, he's a black quarterback. And we know that black quarterbacks have oftentimes not gotten a fair shake in the NFL. So he's got that looming over him. He also got sabotaged in Buffalo last year. So he's already dealt with this before. So you're dealing with a guy whose psyche might be fragile. And even though they did a good job in the media of saying, like, he's our guy, we're not seeing it on Sundays based on how the team is performing and based on how the plays are being called for him, because they did not call the same type of plays for Tyrod that they did for Baker. And I heard people say, well, Baker got rid of the ball quicker. That's why the offense is moving quicker. You know, Tyrod was, you know, he was too scared to make those throws. And I don't necessarily agree with all that. I think that may be true to an extent. But
I
not
disagree
entirely.
Because only time you can say stuff like that is getting the boy the ball quicker is if that's your second or third read. Those reads for Baker, when the pass to Landry, the pass to Njoku, them quick passes, those were his first reads.
Mm-hmm.
He was supposed to go there.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? So, yeah, he gets the ball out faster on his first read because that's where you're going.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? Now, if he goes through his progressions and ends up getting the ball out faster, oh, he looks 1, 2, 3 and gets the ball out faster, that's something different. Which he is better at that than Tyrod because he's the number one overall pick. And he should be better. But the plays they were calling, Baker wasn't checking out. He wasn't going to his second receiver or third receiver. He was hitting the first guy, and they would come over. And that's why it looked like he had the ball faster. Tyrod's first play would be somebody down the – he's looking off. You know what I'm saying? He's looking off to a second and third check down guy. Baker, the plays were called to those guys. And if anybody tells me different, I know they're lying. Because I've been watching football too long.
Right, right.
You don't go through your Drew Brees, Tom Brady, and them don't even go through their progressions that fast to get the ball out to a guy like that if he's not the first receiver. So all of that, he gets the ball out faster. Yes, he does. And he will because he's a better quarterback. But the play calls were the reason why the offense moved that way.
Mm-hmm. Let me ask you this then. So you said it's not for the greater good, but how much credit does Baker himself deserve for galvanizing the team and creating that energy that was in that stadium? The fact that the guys were blocking better for him, the fact that guys were making plays for him, the fact that guys were executing in a special teams game and defense was getting stops once he came in the game and there was life in that building. Like, doesn't Baker deserve some credit for that himself?
100%. He does. I mean, like I said, we talked about that. I mean, on the field, his antics in college, like, to me, dude's a prick. You know what I'm saying? Like, that's what I've seen out of him, personality-wise.
Right.
But
you've not been afraid to say that. You said the same thing about Steph Curry a long time ago.
The players at Oklahoma love them, and it seems like the players at the Browns love them. So that's a leadership quality you need in a quarterback to galvanize the troops. So, like you said, you don't know that until you sit in a room with him. So maybe that's what John Dorsey saw. He can galvanize troops. He's a leader of men. Some guys are leaders of men. I might not like them seeing them from afar, but in the locker room, that's all that matters because those are the guys that's going to battle with him. So he gets 100% credit for that because a lot of rookies don't have the locker room like that,
mm-hmm.
especially rookie quarterbacks.
Right.
So, no, he gets a ton of credit for that.
Well, here's what we know. We know Baker Mayfield, regardless of what Hugh Jackson says, he's going to be starting in Oakland next week. So, and best of luck to him for the sake of Browns Nation and the Dog Pound. I'm just, like I said, I think he's good. I think he did a lot of positive things on Thursday. But this whole notion or narrative that he's leaps and bounds ahead of Tyrod or that Tyrod could not move the offense at all and that he looks like garbage and Baker looks leaps and bounds better, like, no, that's a very surface level elementary, rudimentary way of looking at that game, where if you dig deeper in the tape, as we did here on the preseason podcast of the year, Vince, you would know that it's a lot deeper than just that. And like you said, the proof is in the pudding, man. The guy, Tyrod, basically threw three bad passes. And the Browns should have won the first two games of the season with Tyrod in there. And if they win those games, they're not coming down on him on Thursday night in the way that they were. But the kicker was missing kicks. You had Jabril Peppers being a terrible returner.
And Troy Aikman was very unprofessional. They were rooting for Baker Mayfield, and they were the ones that planted seeds. Like, the first incompletion, looks like Baker could, you know what I'm saying? Like, you guys are an analyst. Shut up and analyze the game. Don't root for nobody to come in. The cameraman kept panning the Baker on the sideline every time Tyrod threw an incompletion, or the Browns got stopped for 0 yards, or he got sacked or something. That's totally unprofessional because they won't do that to, they wouldn't have did it to Baker if Tyrod was his backup.
You know, I don't think so.
It's totally disrespectful and totally unprofessional, and it's from the top down.
Mm-hmm.
The Browns set them out to get roasted. I don't know who did it, but they set them out to get roasted.
I agree.
And the national media and the guys that are doing the commentating were really, really, really going against this kid. And like I said, the only thing I've heard about Tyrod is he's a good teammate, a good person, and they treated him like trash. And I'm disappointed with the Browns as an organization and the way the NFL did it yet on Thursday night. I could care less about the fans, because the Cleveland Browns fans, I had tickets for 14 years. Cleveland Browns fans are the most passionate fans, but the most non-knowledgeable fans I've ever came in contact with. So overall, we got passion, but we have stupidity when it comes to football as Cleveland Browns fans. And I've seen it from 2002. To 2016, that's all I can stand as being a season ticket holder.
But the one transition I will make from the Browns, though, was Josh Gordon. Obviously, there was a Josh Gordon deal to New England. How do you feel like that impacts the Browns and the Patriots?
I think that impacts the GOAT great, because if Josh Gordon is on the field, it's going to help Tom Brady, even if he doesn't throw the ball to him. Like, that's Tom Brady's best threat since Randy Moss had wide receiver.
Mm-hmm.
Like, the guy is that talented. Now, can he stay on the field? That's something different. And I've always had a problem with people trying to get rid of Josh Gordon in Cleveland. Like, they've been trying from the beginning, like I said, dude has done some stupid things, but I was always like, you don't get rid of Hall of Fame talent like that when we got a team full of trash. What, we gonna get another a fourth left guard for them? And like, who's going to make the roster when Josh Gordon doesn't make the roster? We're not gonna get no elite guy. So
that'll be Carlton Mitchell
for a long snapper or something. You know what I'm saying? Like, I was never that guy, but I think he ran his course, and it seemed like he didn't want to play for this team, so it was every excuse. So the Browns got rid of him. That's fine. I don't have any problems with it. But if Josh Gordon is on the field, he's going to help the New England Patriots, because I've seen Tom Brady drag trash at wide receiver to Super Bowl. So you get a guy with that much talent, he's going to help. Now, can he stay on the field, and can he run the right routes and remember the playbook because he's high? I mean, we don't know about that, but the play he made in Pittsburgh was an excellent play.
Mm-hmm.
That was just 2 weeks ago. So if Tom Brady gets that guy, it's going to help the Patriots out a ton.
So I've seen Tom Brady drag trash at every position to Super Bowls. Yeah, I mean, that's how good true. He is. So knowing that, I wrote a piece on Hip Hop Sports Report about why Bill Belichick did not do more to help out Brady in this offseason. I think maybe it has something to do with some of the jealousy. I think Belichick's been taking some L's lately internally in New England. He took an L with respect to the Alex Guerrero situation. He took an L with respect to the Jimmy Garoppolo situation. He ended up getting traded, and I don't think Belichick wanted him to. So where does that leave us now? I mean, there's a book out now where apparently Brady was contemplating divorcing himself from Belichick, and people inside the Patriots organization are saying that they could have had some similar success with any top 15 quarterback, and that Brady's not as special as people think he is. Allegedly, this is what was said. And when you look at the roster against Jacksonville, they were, from an athletic standpoint on the outside, they just weren't any match for Jacksonville. I mean, like, they doubled Gronk, and once they doubled Gronk, they basically had nothing left. They didn't have any second pitch, the Patriots did.
Very true.
And so now Josh Gordon will help that cause, but what do you make of the relationship between Brady and Belichick? How come Brady or Belichick didn't do more to help Brady and his team out? I mean, because they watched Danny Amendola leave, Deion Lewis leave, several guys, Malcolm Butler left, Brandon Cooks got traded. Like, they, all these guys left and they brought nothing in. What do you make of all that? And are the Patriots, can they get back to another Super Bowl this year?
I would always say they could get back with Brady as quarterback, because he's dragged trash and they've depleted the roster every year. Like, the Browns have gotten some guys from the Patriots that, you know what I'm saying, that not maybe at the height of their career, but still can play. And like, they just cut guys, especially on the defensive side. They haven't made the defensive side better in 15 years. Because Brady is putting up points. He doesn't have wide receivers. The Patriots have never really gave Tom Brady weapons. I mean, they had Gronk and Aaron Hernandez, but they were tight ends. They were talented guys, and Gronk is a talented guy, but they haven't had any talented wide receivers. They got Randy Moss after he was supposed to be done. You know what I'm saying? They had Edelman and these former quarterbacks. You know what I'm saying?
Like, lacrosse players.
The team. You know what I'm saying? It's just Tom Brady's going to pull us out of it. You know what I'm saying? It may be to the point where the AFC teams like Jacksonville and those guys are getting better, and he's getting older, and he's not going to be able to carry him. But I don't think Belichick or the Patriots organization have done anything to make Tom Brady great. You know what I'm saying? When you got these free agents out, they don't spend money on guys.
Nope.
Even to keep guys in the system. Definitely not to get guys that's out on the market.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? Like, so – like I said, I don't know about the situation, but I'll tell you this. And I don't hate Bill Belichick like Browns fans hate Bill Belichick, like my father, God rest his soul, did before he passed. I don't hate Bill Belichick, but we have seen Bill Belichick as a head coach without Tom Brady, and we haven't seen Tom Brady without Bill Belichick. You know what I'm saying? So we've seen Bill Belichick is not the same coach without Tom Brady. Tom Brady's been with Belichick all the time, so we don't know what he would be without Bill Belichick. But we do know what Bill Belichick is without Tom Brady, and he's not that genius that he's been with Tom Brady.
No, that's a great way to put it, man. And as a matter of fact, without if you look at Bill Belichick without Tom Brady, Bill Belichick is not Bill Belichick. Bill Belichick is Jerry Glanville, because that's what his career win percentage is in games without Brady. It's about 45%. You know what I mean? It's sub 500 career. And it's not a small sample, y'all. I be telling people all the time, it's not a small sample size. We're talking about like 6+ years of data between the years in Cleveland, the Deflategate suspension, the year Brady got hurt, the first year that Belichick was in New England. You add all that up, we're talking over 6 years of evidence of Belichick being a coach. Everybody wants to point to those two games because of Deflategate or those three games, they went 3-1. They got shut out the last game against Buffalo. Nobody remembers that. And they won a game with Smoke and Mirrors and Jacoby Brissett, and they won a game where Jimmy G started a game and a half. And all of a sudden, that means that Brady's not all that he's cracked up to be. I never understood it. Like, we have 6 years of data that suggests that Belichick is average at best, without Brady.
Without Tom Brady.
Now, on the flip side, we don't have evidence of what Brady is without Belichick because Brady's kept Belichick employed all these years. But we do have, but we do have evidence of what Tom Brady was in college. And what he was in college was a guy that when he got to Michigan, he was seventh or eighth on the depth chart, worked his way up to number one, then got screwed out of being number one, then earned his position back into number one, and then took the team to the Orange Bowl, and they won the Orange Bowl despite being down two touchdowns twice in that game. So that sounds an awful lot like the same dude that we see in the NFL, if you ask me. But so speaking of Brady, though, I'm wanting to get your thoughts on this. And this is coming up in November, but I don't think I've ever got it from you on the record. I want you to talk a little bit about Brady versus Aaron Rodgers, man. Like, that's been the debate that everybody's had coming into the season. We haven't gotten that Super Bowl yet. Everybody's kind of hoping for it, I think. And, you know, there's a lot of people that are like, Rodgers is the greatest I've ever seen. Rodgers is the greatest today. Rodgers is this and that. But we don't see the team success with Rodgers that we do with Brady, and people want to credit Belichick for that and all that stuff. How do you measure those two players against one another?
Tom Brady's better. Tom Brady's better. He has a career that shows he's better. Aaron Rodgers makes the most amazing football throws I've ever seen.
Right.
But I don't know if Aaron Rodgers is the leader that Tom Brady is. I've seen
Aaron Rodgers
throw his teammates under the bus a few times. And I'm a big Aaron Rodgers fan, but Aaron Rodgers does not do what Tom Brady does. And Aaron Rodgers has had, if not as much, no, I'm not going to say if not as much. He has more talent offensively than Tom Brady. Tom Brady's dragged sacks of trash.
He's the garbage man.
Like, Aaron Rodgers hasn't did it. He hasn't did it. Arm talent, Aaron Rodgers, 10 times above Tom Brady. Mm-hmm. Aaron Rodgers can do stuff with the ball that I've never seen done. And I've watched Joe Montana play. Dan Marino played. I was my favorite quarterback. I've watched Aaron Rodgers does stuff with the football I've seen nobody do in the NFL history that I've seen play. But who's better? Tom Brady is. Period. Mm-hmm. There's no argument. It's no argument.
Yeah. I mean, I don't think there was an argument either.
It's like a guy that leads the NBA in scoring and you say he's better than LeBron.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Like,
yeah.
You got guys that can put up points like Harden won the MVP the year, Westbrook won the MVP, Steph won two MVPs. None of them are even close to LeBron. And that's the way it is with Brady and everybody else. Period.
Yeah, that's pretty much how I feel, man.
It's no argument. And people that argue it don't know football.
Nah, they don't.
It's no argument at all. And I love Aaron Rodgers, but it's no argument. Not even close.
Yeah, I agree with you 100%, man. I mean, I see the career accolades, and that's one thing, but I mean, here's the best way I can put Brady and Rodgers in perspective. It's like, people like to point out that Rodgers has a higher career passer rating, and that Rodgers' passer rating is highest all time, and that Rodgers has a higher touchdown to interception ratio, and that Rodgers is highest all time. That's all true, and those are great arguments to make if you're in favor of Rodgers being better than Brady. Where I would challenge you, though, is that Brady is like close to Rodgers in those categories. He's like second basically all time, and Rodgers is first, or Brady maybe fourth in passer rating. But the point is Brady's done what he's done over the course of 10 more seasons than Rodgers has. Rodgers can't even stay healthy at this point. So show me Aaron Rodgers, like let Rodgers do what he's doing now. Let him win a couple more Super Bowls and then let him play at the same level that he's at now 10 more years from now. Consistently the entire time, then we can have a discussion about whether or not he's better than Brady. The longevity thing absolutely matters, and so people that want to just push that to the side are crazy to me. Like, Rodgers is great.
All of these stats, like I said, I grew up watching football for almost 40 years, and a lot of these passer rating and all these stats have only been around the last 10 years. Like, it's guys in he got the best passer rating or the best rack and run out the catch, and he this that average. These is new stuff. These computer geeks trying to get into sports. That's what it is. Because it's a lot of NFL Hall of Fame guys that played quarterback, your Bart Starrs, your Terry Bradshaw's that are in the Hall of Fame, and their statistics compared to today are horrible.
Very true.
69% passer ratings and stuff like that. These guys were in the Hall of Fame.
Right.
That didn't matter back then. These are computer geeks getting into football. These stats are overblown. They got a stat for everything.
Yeah.
I go with football from the eye test. And Tom Brady has been great for 13, 14 years, and he's great at 40 years old. And Aaron Rodgers has been great for 6 years on and off because of injuries.
Well, Brady's been great for all 18 years as far as I'm concerned, because Brady was a redshirt freshman in the NFL when he won the Super Bowl. Like,
yeah. That's very true. That's very true. His level of what he's doing, 14, 15 years is incredible.
Yeah, exactly.
In the first 3 years, he was doing what Brady does, but just on a smaller scale because they were winning more with defense and other stuff.
What's funny, too, though, and not to turn this into a Tom Brady podcast, but what's funny, though, before we move on, is a lot of people will say what you just said, but they'll use it to denigrate Brady, and they'll say, it was all Belichick's defense that first Super Bowl, or Tom Brady only threw one touchdown pass in that first Super Bowl run. And it's like, yeah, that's true. But if you go back and watch the game that he played in the Tuck Rule game, excuse me.
Yeah.
If you go back and watch the Tuck Rule game, Brady was phenomenal in the second half of that game. He was vintage Brady that we see today, that level. And he didn't pass for a touchdown, but he did run for one in that game. And then he goes in against Pittsburgh and got hurt, and Bledsoe came in. But in the first half of that game, Brady was great. The numbers are there, and I can prove it even further than what I've just said, but we don't have time to go into it. But I did want to ask you real quick about, so if it's not, you know, maybe it's the year for New England. I picked San Diego to come out the AFC at the start of the year on Twitter, only because I felt like their team had pretty much everything, even though they lost Jason Verrett. And now that Bosa's missing games, now I'm a little more concerned about that pick. But I always feel like I reserve the right to fall back on New England, because you're not going to find a bigger Tom Brady believer than I am. So I always believe that,
I agree,
that Brady and the Patriots are in the mix.
They always have a chance. Like any NBA team always has a chance with LeBron on it.
Right.
You always have a chance with Tom Brady on it. And to put the argument to bed, yes, Tom Brady is better than Aaron Rodgers. And don't even have that discussion with me. If you see me on the street, don't even have that discussion with me.
So let me ask you this then, but if it's not New England and we see all the mess that's going on in Pittsburgh, who is it out the AFC if it's not either of those two teams?
I like Jacksonville, but I don't like Blake Bortles. So it all depends what Blake Bortles you get. If Blake Bortles cannot turn the ball over, he don't have to throw four touchdowns and stuff like he did that game against the Patriots the other day. He just can't lose the game for you, because they have a nice running game. The offensive line is good. They have great defense. They are poised to make that next step. It just all depends on that guy that under center. And I would give them the nod, but I'm scared to give the nod to Blake Bortles. I am.
Okay, that's fair. I think Blake Bortles has earned that much throughout his career that there's some skepticism there, and it's warranted. Yeah, so like I said, I mean, you're kind of on Jacksonville. I still kind of like San Diego, but they got to turn some stuff around in San Diego. Let me ask you this, though. Switch to the NFC. The Rams are a team that have gotten a lot of buzz, and rightfully so. And I like the Rams a ton. I really like Todd Gurley. I've been repping Todd Gurley for many, many years, going back to his days at Georgia. I thought he was a special player, and we're seeing it now. He was runner-up to MVP last year. Everybody loves McVay. But what's weird about the Rams is that they went out and they added a bunch of free agents, though. And that typically does not work out well in the long run. Do you see them as the favorite in the NFC, or do you have another team that you would put there?
The Rams are tough. The Rams got the pieces. It just, like, it's kind of like gelling at the right. Like, when you bring a lot of free agents in, you have to gel. I want to see what keep the Super Bowl champions at.
In the conversation.
Number one in the NFC for right now. I want to see what Carson Wentz looks like when he gets back. But the Eagles still have this pretty much the same package. Nick Foles played like trash the first couple games. So if Carson Wentz comes back and, you know what I'm saying, kind of picks up where he left off, the Eagles should be there because they're defensively. But the Rams are got a good shot, man. The Rams defensively solid. Everybody likes the young head coach. And, you know, Todd Gurley and Jared Goff, they got a nice team out there. So if I kind of say 1 and 1A, like I said, I want to see what the Eagles look like when Wentz gets back. If Wentz comes back in pretty solid form, I think the Eagles should be the favorite again coming out the NFC.
So here's my thing with Philly, man. And I was a semi-Philly believer last year. I had Philly making the playoffs before the season started. I had them beating Atlanta in that first wild card game with Nick Foles, and nobody really had that. So that was a division round game. Yeah, that was a division round game, actually. I actually picked the Falcons to beat the Rams, and then I picked the Eagles to beat the Falcons. I was dead on in the NFC last year, y'all. And then I had the Saints beating the Vikings, which they would have if not for, you know, what happened in that game.
Yeah, we know that.
But I did not have the Eagles beating the Patriots in the Super Bowl. So props to the Eagles for that. But I don't know the Phillies as hungry as they were last year. I'm not seeing it right now. I didn't see it in the preseason. You're not seeing it so far. They were lucky to beat Atlanta again 2 weeks ago. Yeah. They got destroyed by Tampa Bay, of all teams, last week. And now people are just kind of, not saying you, but people are just kind of assuming that Wentz is going to come back and just be at top form. And that his hunger, because he didn't get to be a part of it last year, is going to be enough to carry them forward. And I'm like, I don't know about all that. I mean, you and I were never the biggest Carson Wentz guys to begin with, even though he was tremendous last year. So
I'm still not the biggest Carson Wentz guy, but like we were talking about with Baker Mayfield, maybe he's the leader of men. Maybe the guys are waiting for their leader to come back to get that spark going.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? That's why I said I want to see what happens when he gets back. Because just him being in a huddle could change things. They are the defending champions. They didn't tweak their roster too much, and they're getting their leader back. So if they get their leader back and they get the hunger back, I think they should be right there. But the Rams is a good runner-up because, to me, Todd Gurley is the truth, and he has been, and he will be. And as long as he can stay healthy, he does so much to make the team better. He takes the pressure off Jared Goff. But that Bears defense is a monster all in itself.
If
Mr. Trubisky can not throw away football games, the Bears are going to be very competitive this year.
So I'm glad you brought that up really quick, and we're short on time. But Mitch Trubisky, the article that I wrote, was basically saying that Mitch Trubisky is doing just fine. I don't understand all the criticism that he's receiving right now. And to me, what I look at with Mitch Trubisky is I look at a guy who came in the same draft class as Deshaun Watson and Pat Mahomes. Now, Watson and Mahomes lit it up when they came in. Watson last year, Mahomes this year. And they were both been stellar from the word go. Trubisky wasn't that. But because of that, I think it's clouding people's understanding of what Mitch Trubisky has been so far. And he hasn't been stellar. I don't want to make it sound like he's been as good as those guys or that he's been great as a passer, because he hasn't been. But he's had moments. He's done some good things. They should have beat Green Bay this year in week one, but the defense fell apart in the second half against a one-legged Rodgers. And then they beat up on Seattle last week. I mean, I think he's right on track with what some of these other Super Bowl winning quarterbacks have that we've seen in the past, like Roethlisberger and Flacco, and like what those guys were, and Russell Wilson, what they were early in their careers and early in their playoff careers, is about what Mitch Trubisky is now. So I'm not saying that the Bears are at that level necessarily, but I think that Mitch Trubisky is doing just fine. But the team that I did want to highlight before we go, because we talked about the Rams, we talked about the Eagles, and I don't think either one of those teams are going to the Super Bowl at the NFC.
Okay.
The team that I picked to go out to the Super Bowl at the NFC, and the team that I picked to win the Super Bowl, is the Minnesota Vikings. And they appear to be cursed in Minnesota, so I don't want to, like, curses are nothing to sneeze at, but we have seen a lot of them broken recently in sports, right? I just think that they have the best combination of everything. They really don't have any weaknesses. They even shored up their kicker this week when they signed Dan Bailey. They got Dalvin Cook back. They got Kirk Cousins in there. He's not great, but he's pretty good, especially when you put weapons around him, and he's better than Case Keenum. They have the best receiver tandem in the league, and I am a firm, just like I'm a believer in Todd Gurley, I'm a firm believer in Stephon Diggs. I think Stephon Diggs is a top five receiver in this league from a skill set standpoint. We're talking about route running, we're talking about hands, we're talking about footwork, we're talking about the total package, breakaway speed, just cleverness. Stephon Diggs is as good as anybody, just about, in my opinion. And Thielen is excellent as well. And their defense is ferocious. I think Minnesota's the best team, man. Why can't Minnesota do it?
They might be the best team. I'm not sold on Kirk Cousins. He's like Blake Bortles to me.
I think he's a little better than that.
No, I'm not saying that kind of wise.
Okay.
He has shown that he's a better quarterback than Blake Bortles, but I won't put my trust in Minnesota until I see Kirk Cousins in big games against big teams down the stretch.
Yeah.
I'm just not a believer in Kirk Cousins. I'm not.
That's fair.
The same way with Blake Bortles, because Jacksonville got the talent to come out of the AFC, and Minnesota has the talent to come out of the NFC. The quarterback position for both of those teams are where I stop at making them the favorites.
That's perfectly fair, man. So we're going to have to leave it there. But I think if we can agree on anything, we can agree on this. Tyrod Taylor got screwed. And the Browns sabotaged Tyrod Taylor. Best of luck to Baker Mayfield. Yeah, but Tyrod Taylor got sabotaged. Thank you, Vince. Appreciate you always coming on the Hip Hop Sports Report podcast, y'all. It's preseason podcast of the year. Check us out. iTunes, Stitcher Radio, wherever you listen to podcasts, man. Hit us up. Holla at y'all. And next time y'all talk to y'all, I'm going to be a father again now. So it's going to be exciting stuff. I'll tell y'all about it.
Congratulations.
Thank you, sir. Yes. Yep, we out of here. Peace.